Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your Cognitive Rampage. You have to believe in the power of you. Uncomfortable is where the change is. You have to be willing to question the impossible, or you're planning for the inevitable. Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you are living your Cognitive Rampage. We are brought to you by Vermont Pure CBD Full Spectrum Wellness Products. Now, if you listen to last podcast, Grant Jacobowski was on the podcast, the founder of that. So if you haven't heard that, I suggest you go back and listen to that podcast. It was Cognitive Rampage 220. He basically told you everything you need to know, and even then some, about CBD and Vermont Pure CBD Full Wellness Products Company. A beautiful company. We got deep into it. But just for the top for you now, look, they grow all their hemp on organic Vermont farmland. That matters. It certainly matters to me. They focus on high CBD and terpene-rich varieties that provide maximum healing benefits. They extract all hemp using high-tech alcohol extraction, not that dangerous butane stuff. They produce the highest quality full-spectrum CBD available. They control the entire process to ensure that they produce the best CBD products on the market. Now, full spectrum, just so you understand it, if you didn't listen to that podcast, means it still contains some THC, but not enough to where it's going to affect you psychoactively. But there are healing properties to the THC, okay? There's isolates that are out there, all right? But when they isolate it like that, it removes some healing properties, some CBN, CBG, some things, again, that you should go back and listen to the podcast with Grant Jacobowski on 220. Go back and listen to that. So the reason full spectrum is more healing is because they leave the full properties in it. They don't pull those things out, all right? So isolates can certainly be helpful, but they're not near as strong medically as a full spectrum product, okay? Especially the fact that it's organic. It's grown on organic farmland, to be specific, okay? So I use this product too. Again, I would not sell or endorse anything I have not used. Do not recommend at all. I wouldn't be doing that at all. So we got to try it out. It has done some wonderful things for me. I don't use it every day. But when I do, it works, whether it's a small ache or pain or something like that. And it's done wonders for psoriasis for myself as well. That runs in my family. It's a gene that's passed down, but, well, no more. So it's amazing the things that you can treat with CBD, especially a full spectrum. Just go to VermontPureCBD.com, enter the promo code Rampage, and you get 10% off. Okay, that's VermontPureCBD.com. Enter code word Rampage for 10% off. And this podcast is also fueled by my book, The Cognitive Rampage, which you can find available now on Amazon. The second edition is out. You can look that up. I'd love to go deep into it, but I've done a ton of podcasts on my actual book. But it's about life change, self-discovery, and, well, getting deep in your own life. And look, you don't have to be at rock bottom. I don't like to classify my book as a self-help book because it's also a self-optimization book, because that's also who it's for. Look, if you're on rock bottom dealing with addiction, depression, anxiety, I promise you this book is for you. It will pull you out of that hole, or at least assist you, right? Because it will be you that pulls you out of that hole. But even if not, if you just like life development, life optimization, learning more about yourself, self-discovery, trying new things, well, and if you don't know what your life philosophy is, right? A lot of people don't know what their actual life philosophy is. Not that quote you keep using and claim to be your life philosophy, right? This book, it's an experience. I'm telling you, it's not just this self-help book filled with motivational fluff and words telling you that a boy, you can do it, right? And just change how you think, right? It's different. It's deeper. It's based in multiple sciences, from the biology down to sociology, cognitive sciences, behavioral sciences, environmental sciences, and working in nature, sleep, all these things that we know to be necessary too. And it's all put together in a self-application for you. You apply it to yourself, and there is no harmful side effects, all right? promise you that at least, right? So pick up that book. You can go to Amazon. Just type in The Cognitive Rampage, basically anywhere on Google. Not too many things named The Cognitive Rampage, and you'll find that book. Welcome to The Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you are living your cognitive rampage. This podcast was something I really wanted to get out for a while. And speaking to people that, well, are dealing with depression and anxiety or have, or if somebody you know is, I suggest sending them this podcast. I seriously go off on a cognitive rampage. And, well, you may have to re-listen once or twice, but I was certainly feeding you with a fire hose on this podcast. Forgive the opening, if you will, but I had to play the song. It's a song that I play, well, before I start every podcast, typically for almost the last 3 to 4 years. And it's music by, well, my favorite artist, my favorite rapper, I should say, of all time, and who's now, well, become a friend. So the song So What by Haystack is what you'll hear in the beginning of this that plays for a while. And, well, it gets into it. I play that music, but one, because I love it, and it reminds me where I came from and how far I've actually come. And, well, not to get too much of a big head, but just to, you know, bring me back to earth and kind of center me down. And well, I also, it reminds me of who I'm doing this for and who I'm talking to, who I wrote my book for, etc. And, well, it just gets me hyped up, you know, to try to help people. And, well, just had to let you know about that before this podcast gets going. But, yeah, I cover a lot of topics related to anxiety, depression, but more importantly, how to beat anxiety and depression. How to, yes, beat it, not cope with it, not deal with it, not lessen it. How to beat depression and anxiety. And I open the podcast by talking about social media anxiety and depression and how that's related to our self-worth. I link all those together. And at the end, I throw a little tidbit in there about risky behavior and a little research I've been doing recently on risky behavior and those that choose the adrenaline drug. But that's a little tidbit at the end. But I seriously dive into this and pull from my book basically during this entire podcast. But it's pretty intense. It's pretty hardcore. You know, I'm certainly delivering a message. You dropped a little message to Gary Vee along the way. But happens to slide out sometimes when I'm passionately doing what I love to do, what I'm enthusiastic about doing. So I hope you enjoy, well, the 222nd Cognitive Rampage podcast.
That's what made me draw that line, blinded by my own design.
I'm doing fine.
No, I'm not. I'm doing bad, but I'm so afraid to talk.
Y'all got
shit
that,
going on. I don't want to bother
y'all. Told you I played this before I go live before every episode.
Never be the man he was. Thought I was slow. I turned out to be a genius. And I ain't returned like eat my peanuts. Let our bank statements be the difference between us.
If I seem distant, bitch, I'm 30-something. I was supposed to be dumb in a murder victim.
My grandma prayed till his knees gave way. If you can't save me, God, please save Jason, the way I went in,
that's look up that song by Haystack. So what? Do that. Do that now. You know what I'm playing in my ear. Reminds me where I came from, what I've been through, a lot of my friends have been through, what they've experienced. You know what I mean?
But there wasn't no telling me I wasn't grown up. Even if I did die young, so
this puts me in the mood, y'all. This time I figured I'd bring them a little early with me before I go live. Before it's all pieced together, you know?
But there wasn't no telling me I wasn't grown up. I was confused, and you can hear it in my rhetoric.
Yeah, come respect, on, Facebook, don't cut me out. All right, so we're going to get started here in a little bit.
My friend Chris got killed.
Got a lot of news to get to on
my
this
man
one.
My man Mike died for a powder pack, so understand why I could think that I was next. Under attack, guns and crack, or the motherfucking police shoot us in the back, and they think it only happens.
What's up, Light Burley? Mr. 52 Blocks himself checking in. Lisa Kraft, Angela Bailey. Dale, what's going on, Dale Neiman? Lisa Kraft, how do you do? Mr. Mike Smith, how are you doing, brother?
If your family is supposed to love me when I'm wrong, be a man and represent me when I'm gone. Stones in the foundation get looked over, but without them, the whole damn house falls over.
This is for the rocks that exist beneath me, the block which gave me a pass to beat me.
BBs are baby bullets, babies are in training. My people were banging before they called it banging. Just chilling,
hanging, words exchanged.
One thing led to another, all I heard was,
yeah, baby. Even if I did die, so what? Nobody expected me to ever grow up. I got a lot of topics to get to tonight. Hey, by the way, if you haven't checked out Light Burley's appearance on the podcast, we did a special edition of Mr. 52 Blocks himself. It's on the website at adamlowry.com. Just go to Fight Life, and on the Fight Life, click on that, and you'll see the podcast we did there with Mr. Light Burley. Really unique individual, man. Beautiful soul, too. So a podcast I recommend everybody listen to. Mr. Light Burley there on adamlowry.com under the Fight Life there. So, all right, man, let's get into this podcast now. And, you know, like I said on the video I just did on my personal page, this topic has been backed up for quite some time on my notes. It's kind of like one of those things I got to check off, right? It builds up, and I'm like, ah, I got to get to it. I got to do this show. And, well, a few other topics backed up on other topics. So we may be here a while tonight. So pull up a nice seat here along the fire. Hang out with me. And, well, let's talk about some things in life that I think most of us or a lot of us experience at one time or another in life, and see if we can drop some tools down and help you out or help a friend out, you know. So if there's somebody you know right now that's reaching out to you on the constant, you know, messaging you, texting you, calling you, hey, you know, I'm anxious, I'm depressed, I'm going through it, then I would suggest right now tagging them on this and say, hey, listen up to this tonight, because what I'm going to try to do is fill in a lot of words for you, because a lot of times when our friends and loved ones or ourselves are going through those things, we don't know exactly what to say, right? It's difficult in what to say and what to do, but it's good to hear those things, you know? So I'm going to get to that eventually, but a lot of these topics are connected. So the topics for this evening's Cognitive Rampage are social media anxiety and then self-worth after that and how that's linked together. And somewhere I'm going to work in risk-taking behavior. And then I'm going to wrap up the podcast more than likely talking about beating depression and anxiety, not dealing with it, not coping with it, but beating those things, and some perspectives to look at and tools to use. All right. So what I like to do when I have a topic that I want to get to is I just blatantly read my notes directly to you. See, these are my notes that are sitting right here. Probably not going to be able to see them right there, but yeah, it's funny. It just comes up as a white screen there. But anyway, there you go. So as I read those notes directly, some of them make sense, some of them don't, but I just read through it, kind of refreshes me before I go live and what I want to talk about, and it pulls me in the directions that I want to go as I'm trying to find that flow state into that cognitive rampage that I like to try to cultivate and pull out of myself, okay? So the relentless social media pushes, campaigns to better yourself brands, that's what I call them, right? It's very difficult to be on social media these days, and all you see is how to better yourself, and I call them better yourself brands. And, well, a lot of those brands are selling you a topic or a thing or some merchandise or something like that. Now, I'm not hating on that fact. If you got to run a business and groups, and you do what you got to do, all right? Or do what you think you need to do, all right? Because a lot of times what we think we got to do ain't really what you got to do. We just believe it to be so. So as you skim through social media, as fast as we skim through it these days, right, whether it's Instagram or social media, pick one. As you go through it, you can see talk after talk after talk after sad thing after something like that. And this begins to wear on our eyes and our ears, okay? So the relentless social media pushes and campaigns to better yourself brands, causing people to constantly believe they need to be better than what they are. You see, so when you are inundated daily through your ears and through your eyes that you need to be better, take this supplement to be better, read this book to be better, you need to do this in your life to be better, make sure you take cold showers, make sure you get sun baths, make sure you do it properly and don't eat this and make sure you eat that and sleep at this time and get up at this time, right? These are all wonderful things. Don't let me knock these ideals, okay? Because these can help and do help millions of people, all right? So let me preface by, I'm not knocking that. And I'm not saying that some people can't and don't use those things. But I'm talking about the far end of the spectrum here. When we are inundated daily with we need to be better, eventually we start to believe that we need to be better or we could be better, right? We start to could all over ourselves or should all over ourselves, as I like to say. I should be better. I should eat like this. I should do this more or this less, right?
And when we start to soak that into our lives and download that daily, what can end up happening is we then begin to tell the narrative constantly to ourselves that then shapes the beliefs that we have that we then need to be better. And then being in the present with who we currently are, what we currently have, what we currently possess, who is currently in our lives, including ourselves, doesn't seem like enough. We don't measure up to the moment, right? So if we continue with the idea that I need to be better, this can, yes, be positive. And I ask people and urge people to question themselves, their own bullshit, question my own bullshit on this podcast. And you can find competence this way as we plow through those things, right? Knowing the truth is what we merely perceive and tell ourselves continually, correct? Correct. So if we believe ourselves to need to be better every day, this can be a positive thing. Yes, we can make strides. We can make changes. Yes, but I'm talking the full end of the spectrum. If we go so far to where all we're watching on social media or reading are motivational memes about how to be better, videos and talks, wonderful videos and talks. Don't get me wrong. I love a lot of them. I mean, a lot of things, again, I will continue to preface that these things are good and they help people. I'm not knocking those things. What I'm pointing out is when you stay immersed in the idea and the belief that you need to be better on the constant, that then being in the present, that stoic approach to life about being in the present becomes more and more difficult. It becomes harder to be grateful for what we currently have and who we currently are in that moment. It is very difficult that way, right? So if you can imagine truly, right, sitting in front of a television screen, a phone, a laptop, and what's constantly being hit in your face is, well, people that A, seem better than you because they may have some money or a company or post only the pictures that reflect something that they want you to see or believe. And our lives may not shape into those pictures that we're seeing, the stories we're hearing. And imagine it's just flashing with you because that's what's happening when we're on social media constantly. And that's what's flashing in front of us. You are being inundated in the eyes and the ears of, oh my God, I need this motivation. I need this meme. This is correct. I should follow this advice. Do this more, right? How can we stay in the present? Can you see how much more difficult it is to be happy in the now? Okay. And so an idea leaks, if you will, slowly into our psyche that performance equals personal value. This just isn't wrong. This just isn't right. You see, as this begins to download, the society that we live in, remember, our performance deems our value many times in this society. If you are a man trying to date, how you provide, how you perform, well, then somehow you have more value on the dating scene. If you're a woman and my performance at the gym of how I look, etc., or even how you perform financially, right, and provide for yourself, maybe perhaps creates more value, right? A lot of these things I'm talking about are the things that this better you need to be a better you, talks about, right? Financially, providing, physically, etc., right? And so our performance begins to dictate the value or the self-worth that we believe we have. Remember, I told you these two topics were going to run together, this social media anxiety combined with self-worth here. One of the biggest mistakes we make is believing that our value is set in the precedent of how we perform. I'll give you an example to back this up. I want you to think about an infant that you know. Maybe it's your infant. Maybe it's a nephew, a cousin, a niece, right? Somebody, a friend that just had a baby. I want you to think about that baby. Does that infant baby perform at anything other than keeping you or your friends awake longer than they should be? Right? It shits, it pukes, it needs cleaning, constant maintenance. What is the value of performance that this infant child delivers to you? As a direct parent, maybe a feeling of warmth, possibly a feeling of anxiety, stress, right? Worry, right? It's not performing. This infant does not perform anything. It's just there. It's just there. You have to feed it, pick it up, carry it. So then the following question then to you is, does that infant have value? Of course it does. The potential value, that infinite value, that infinite potential value that infant holds then and there. You see, somewhere along the line, we miss that. We even teach our own kids this, right? We reward them for their performance, and then we value judge them based on their lack of
performance. And, well, over time, all of us, right, if you performed well at school, you got your reward. Maybe you didn't. If you performed well on the practice field, well, then that gave us then value. We now have value. If you performed something funny and the social group accepted you, well, now you then have value. So as you imagine this infant getting older and older and older, learning that its value is coming from how one performs. But we just thought and spoke about how that infant had value despite its performance. I mean, if the infant overcries, does it lose value? Would we throw the baby out with the bathwater? No, we would not. This value remains, but somewhere, if you can tell me where along the line that this changes, when this infant then grows up and then has to perform based on social constructs, the way our daddy's always done it, the way our culture's taught us to do it, that if you don't perform now, well, somewhere along the line, this baby then becomes a winner child or a loser child. From the outside, or maybe in your own mind, or no, Adam, that's always my baby. It'll always be a winner. It'll never be that way, right? Well, talk to some parents that have dealt with their children that have been, well, hard to deal with. My mother being one of those coming up in my crazy late teens and 20s all the way through. I was quite a handful. And perhaps the kindest things of my baby is valuable may not have been the best answer, right? So my point is, where does it change along the line where this infant that we know has value slowly begins to lose value based on their performance when we have to start performing, right? So I want you to correlate this to what I talked about in the beginning. If what we are being inundated with is we must perform, you need to be this, you need to look this way, you must perform. Dr. Albert Ellis would refer to that, right? Masturbation, you must do this or else you are not that. Once you achieve this, then you will have acquired value. We have built our value. Somewhere along the line, it changes. This little infant that has value, no matter how much it pukes, pees, cries, or doesn't sleep, remains valuable. But then it's 7, then this child becomes 10, 13, 14, and then all of a sudden, well, the value then is based on how this child or teen or person then performs, and somehow, well, it just has lost value to society or self. Now apply that to yourself. We are taught, raised, inundated, marketed to, broken up with, dated because of our performance. And when we do not perform well, you've seen men and women on Wall Street leap to their deaths off of buildings when the crash of 2008 happened because they could no longer perform or provide or have the life they were used to, and everything was going to fall apart in their mind, everything in quotes. Thus, life is no longer continue living. And our self-worth is then judged this way. For athletes, on a side note, it's a different ballgame, excuse the pun, because everything we tend to gain from our social environments, personally, even in school or toward college, is based on how we perform on that court, field, etc. However we perform, then it is downloaded to be the value of what we have. And so as we're inundated constantly, from social media, from others, from our parents, and more importantly, from ourselves. When we inundate ourselves that we are not okay until, that everything will be fine once I, after I get through this part, then I'll be okay. Pick the line, pick the statement that we tend to tell ourselves. Once this happens, then this will happen. I'll be through it, then I'll be fine. I'll be okay once. I'll get through it. And when this time is over, then I'll be okay. See, it becomes more difficult to remain in the present, in the where we are now, as being okay, and being okay as, well, life happening, right? I love to refer to the Stoic approach of that, right? That good or bad, nonetheless, that we are here alive in the present, and that is just what it is. But how do you, right? Oh, Adam, you have to be there, right? If I don't perform well, if I lose my job, well, my wife will leave me. If I don't look this way or perform this way, then you will lose those people, possessions, everything, in quotes, that I've purposefully mentioned. Your life and your breath is pretty much the everything. Your kids will love you. But if people run out on you as the ship is sinking, well, at least that's just less weight in the boat to make it sink any faster. And it's hard to maybe realize that when you're in the boat with that person or have been through the life with that person. But when we begin to judge or demote ourselves, relieve ourselves of self-worth based on our performance, we are crossing some deadly, deadly, deadly boundaries. It can lead to some serious, serious mental health issues. So again, why does your performance dictate your personal value? I urge people to ask themselves questions and not make statements. You see the difference between rational self-analysis or observation and simply making direct statements about ourselves are done by changing punctuation. I am a piece of shit, right? These are statements that we make. I should be better at this. These are periods. But when we can flip that, when we can flip it to a question and ask ourselves that question, we learn to become an observer of our thoughts, not a reactor to our thoughts, right? Just because you think it doesn't make it so and feelings aren't facts, that's hard for people to download. I'll say it again. Just because you think it, it doesn't make it fact. Just because you feel it, doesn't make it so. Feelings are not facts, and just because you think it, it doesn't make it so. So why does your performance, or do we allow our performance to dictate our daily personal value? I have performed poorly at this, thus I have no value. I haven't acquired this. I haven't provided this, thus I have no value. Why do we allow that to happen? Well, society tells us, right? We are to judge ourselves based on the social constructs of what the quotes here norm says is a good person or is a bad person. This is where we start to get lost. It is hard to separate the social construct of enforcement of who we are supposed to be versus where we are now. And many times it's our own mind that we've made up about who we are and who we're supposed to be that we can't let go of because you believe it to be your value. It is our own personal philosophy of what our values are rather than questioning why do I download these values as being who I am, or the value of who I am being predetermined on my performance about anything. I can hear you now. Well, what if Adam, they're a piece of shit. They're doing all these other things. Well, now we're talking about performing hurtful things against other people, not caring about other people. So I ask you, if someone's performing terrible acts towards other people and themselves, their performance, or it's the value-based judgment? They're hurting other people, right? So there's no value in hurting other people. It's negative value in this. So it's not about judging others as we are our own worst critic. So it's about examining ourselves, and this is where we have to start. If we examine ourselves by asking ourselves the question, why is it that I allow my performance at A, B, C, D to thus determine the value of who I am? More than likely, you were programmed this way. You got the trophy when you performed well. Nowadays, you get a trophy just for showing up, all right? But I'm not going to go there. When you made good grades, you were rewarded this way. When you did something funny, when you were Mr. or Mrs. Cool or Mr. or Mrs. Pretty, you had the society or social rewards coming from that, right? Sports awards. Imagine where we're getting the rewards from and where those rewards that then reconcrete, they reinforce to us, okay, this is the performance that I must do or continue to do in order to receive the reward. Then we continue with that performing. Thus, now we have value. But when we build our house on sand, well, I'll let you finish that one. And I promise you, our performance is sand because we will fail. We will screw up. We will make a mistake. We will not provide once or twice or for a while. And when that happens, if our foundation thus is built in something like performance, we are asking for destruction. We are asking to fall apart at the seams the first time you lose your job, the first time your wife leaves you, the first time the guy says something mean to you and never calls you back, the first time something happens based on how we performed, our value of self will fall apart. When we find value in external things in our lives, you are building the foundation of self on sand. This is what I'm referencing. So we have to begin to understand, love thyself, love yourself, building it onto the value of the person that you know you are, not how that person performs. The person that you are, how do you treat others? How do you respond to others? Do you help others? Does your empathy go out the window the minute somebody doesn't agree with you? If somebody has a different value or a different belief on life, a different outlook, if they look different than you, if they make different choices than you, do we then draw the line and go, ah, I only help people that are, well, of my own political view? We don't. That's where it gets shaky. So the difficult part, if you want to say in any of this, if there is, remember, I also say it's only difficult if you believe it to be. But the difficult part about this for many people is letting go of the construct of the constructs and also the performance and the behaviors we've done over a long period of time that have reinforced these constructs to us through different reward influences and being able to challenge those to say, hey, I have value regardless of how big my home is, regardless if I lose my job. I'm okay because the present time is the now. But when you're inundated constantly, see, it's worse. So I'm pointing out just how we beat ourselves up in our own minds and just how the constructs shape us and set us up for depression, anxiety, et cetera, when we do not perform and how we beat ourselves up for these things. You know what? I should be happy. That's the other approach. So many people look around and go, I should be happy. Look at all the things I have and I'm still not happy. You know, this movie star or rock star killed themselves. How can they do that when they had everything they've ever wanted, right? Right. So we look at still at lives of people that have obtained things, have had experiences of travel around the world. They have people that love them, admire them. They create art. They must have everything. How could they possibly do that? I'm telling you is when the happiness is based on the externals. When your happiness is based on the externals, this becomes the difficult task because externals will go away. Time may take them. Decisions, performance may help you to lose them and to gain them. But when the value of who we are is determined upon those externals, on those accomplishments, on obtaining certain things, people, titles, when these things are where we bury or foundation our happiness, I'm telling you, the roots are in sand and they won't make it. The difficult part is then brushing off, asking yourself, why is it my performance dictates my value? How come I accept that truth? That's just the way it is, Adam. No, we can question those truths and those societal constructs, and then we can go back and then move forward from there to say, man, I will not allow those externals and those performances thus to be how I define myself. You are not your accomplishments. You are not your goals. You are not your failures. You are not your mistakes. You are not your choices. The value of you as the individual. When we can find value in that present, current moment, the value of life itself that we have in that moment, despite the size of the home we are in, despite how many things you have, and even how many people are in your life currently. Well, here you might call the difficult part. The reason that becomes difficult, one, is because you believe it to be, and the way we've all been raised, and I'm just as guilty, the way we've been raised is to determine our value by those things. It may even be difficult for you in the moment to even think and comprehend the idea of that, of going, wait, how do I not have value? Look what wait. This is where it starts. When we can observe our thoughts, ask questions to those thoughts. Wait, why do I allow my performance to dictate my value? Ask yourself that right now. Why do I allow my performance to dictate my value? And I want you to remember the infant now, because you were that infant at one point. What changes it? Whether the infant eventually talks back, does poor behaviors, makes mistakes, fails forward, doesn't achieve, doesn't obtain. And somewhere along the line, perhaps you've ripped your own value away from you because you have failed to perform. And it gets dangerous. And so just that alone, just the social constructs alone, just the personal mindset itself that will attack your value, your belief of self-worth on its own, much less social media telling you every day as you skim through it, you need to get better. You need to be in better shape. You need to eat less sugar. You need to make sure this. You need to make sure that. Here's what a hero does. I always love it when somebody that's made it and has a whole lot of money looks back and gives the advice on what someone else should do because they experienced being poor at one time. And since now they have money, Well, easily said from the person holding a couple million dollars, right? Take it from those in the bottom. Well, I was poor once too, and I'm sorry, people, luck has a lot to do with what we achieve in this life and who you know and other things. But you can't be the person either going, can I just get a break, right? We don't want to be caught being this person waiting for some break, right? Internal versus external locus of control, meaning people that tend to have an internal locus of control that they believe they dictate their destiny, their future, that they shape it, that they create it through their choices, through their behaviors, tend to be, well, 90 times more successful than people that have an external loci of control. External locus of control puts that on the outside. I would have been better if my father would have just. I would have been better if I would have given the $1 million, if I would have just gotten that break, if those people wouldn't have said that to me, if my boss would have gave me the promotion, if my brother would have done this instead, if I would have just done this, if this could have happened. External locus of control, the life of excuses, right? And you find a huge separation of quotes here, success, because again, success, I'm telling you, can come in multiple forms, right? The simple life of a carpenter that's, well, 9 to 5, builds some things, or, you know, the farmer who makes something, grows something, feeds some people, or makes medicine and comes home, I promise you, is just as rewarding as any other superstar or giant amazing thing that many of us think that if we just do that, well, then we will have made it. We will have arrived. That living the simple life itself can be quite rewarding and is difficult in its own right. Why do we allow our performance to dictate our daily self-worth? If you could imagine for a second, we're sitting here and you could wipe that out and go, wait a minute, how I have performed in my past, pick the topic, pick the subject, how I'm performing presently, pick the topic, pick the subject. If we can wipe that out, has no meaning to anything. Because if we can remove that social construct cap and put it to the side and go, all right, society and stuff says that this is what is successful. This is what I am supposed to do. Many times I tell people, if you're finding yourself saying supposed to, start there. Remove that supposed to. If we can, ooh, I'm getting excited. If we can remove that just for a second, right, and take that out of the picture of what you're supposed to do, how you are supposed to perform, remove that and sit still just in the present of the person that you know you are in your heart and in your mind. Can you? Can you still see the value? Can you be that infant child in your mind and hold that potential limitless of human value that sits within inside every one of us, despite the mistakes that we have made? If you feel your brain short-circuiting going, if you find yourself wanting to argue with me, urge there, ask those questions toward whatever statement you're making, make the statement, take the punctuation, turn the period, turn the exclamation point to a question mark and start there. Can I? Why do I allow daily performance to determine my daily self-worth? Because society said so? Because your ex-husband said so? Because your mom told you? Because your grandparents said? Because somebody? Well, because it's difficult to answer. Because we allow it to. And it's hard to remove that. That infant child has value. And remind yourself of the infant child. That infant child has value, period, sitting there. So do you. You have that same amount of value. And then when you mix in constantly strolling through social media with this meme, this advice, imagine getting vice advice every day on the constant. That's what's happening on social media. You're getting it now from me. And when you skim that every day and you're just going through it, be a better person, be this better life. Good people do this. Bad people do that. Dating narcissists are like doing this. Oh, yeah, I understand here. I've been there, right? When we go through all of these things and you watch this other uplifting video or maybe one of my damn videos that go live or some awesome TED talk. Again, I'm not saying that these things are not good, that they're not motivational. A lot of times we need them, right? We think we do. So if you think you need them, of course you need them, right? If we believe them to be important, then of course they're important and they're necessary to our lives and our functioning. But if you're inundated every day looking about, man, I got to get better. Look how in shape that 58-year-old is, man. My God, I got to stop doing that. I got to be more like them. I got to be more like this. When we do that, we lose who we are and we begin to forget about the value we currently have as self, and our self-worth begins to plummet. So let's say you find yourself there with anxiety or depression. This is a topic unto itself. I've done many a podcast talking about depression and anxiety, what those things mean, what we're supposed to do about it. I wanted to finish off those notes too. I kind of covered it, went on a rampage, but when you can eliminate that idea of once you have, then you'll be better. Once I acquire, then it'll be even better. Once I get through this. Remember, as you're scrolling through this podcast or any live videos I do or anybody else's telling you how to be better or whatever, remember, you're chasing their idea of better. And perfection is when you lose yourself at your already present best. Chasing perfection is not rational. It's not real. No one's going to be that way. Remember, more than likely, you're chasing societies, your parents, social constructs are what these are, these ideals, and whatever video or hero you're watching, you're chasing their idea of what better is. And we lose ourselves when we chase other people's philosophies of what is better. We begin to lose ourselves and our own philosophies and values of what define us, what makes us think that we have value. And when you get lost in other people's ideals of what better means and lose your own, you begin to lose that self-worth. So when you're dealing with depression, I'm going to start there, right? See, depression is something that affects you. And mind you, it's not cancer. Okay. I had a guy comment on the podcast the other day that people talking about pills or no pills for anxiety, et cetera, must have never had severe PTSD or anxiety, because that's like telling somebody with cancer they shouldn't take their medicine. And hold the fuck on. I'm sorry, depression and anxiety are not diseases. Okay. They're not diseases like cancer. You are affected by depression and anxiety. And mind you, they are a group of symptoms that we gather into some sort of context done by patient report that then we put a label on it called the diagnosis of depression. You sort of fit into this box of things, so we need to label it something. And many times in treatment, remember, we label something thus so we can treat something. So understanding what it is that you, quotes, are being affected by, not that you are, not that you have. Again, remember, you wouldn't say, oh, I am headache. No, I have a headache. You are being affected by depression. I have depression is a little bit better, but I would urge you to say I'm being affected by depression. But remember, thoughts become things, what we believe. So I'm going to just skip all of that other stuff of perception and ideals and how we create that ourselves many times, how that's shaped in. Many times our self-worth, our performance is really the root cause of the, quotes, depression, right? That I always talk about, that depression and anxiety are symptoms, not the diagnosis. That when we're feeling depression and anxiety, this is our body and our minds telling us, get us the fuck out of here. It's asking us to make changes, to be different. And when we just simply mask those things, when we mask the alarms, the human alarms of depression and anxiety with whatever you mask it with or try to avoid them with, then maybe we're avoiding the actual root of the problem, that these things are symptomatic, not the diagnosis, that what we're experiencing are depression and anxiety as symptoms of our own lives, and especially symptoms of how we are choosing to think about our own lives and how we may behave currently or have behaved in our own lives, all right? So you got to think about depression maybe as a whole, right? A literal whole. It takes time for depression to come on. We may perform poorly. We begin to judge ourselves based on our performance. Other people let us down. And now, mind you, again, we allow others to hurt us because we have set expectations about what these people should or should not do. Then when they break those expectations, we set ourselves up to be, quotes, hurt by other people. It's much easier to put the blame on others than accept it ourselves, that we allowed that, that in our expectations that we set on these people, we, well, set ourselves up to be hurt. But it takes a while is what I'm saying, and sometimes it just gradually comes on. We don't perform well, or we have a goal that we don't obtain. That's why I argue sometimes goals can be a distraction and not really good. That, yeah, have a goal. If it works for you, set it to pull you out of one, but be prepared to set another one. You're not going to achieve your goal and go, okay, I got my goal. I'm good. Nothing else, right? We're going to keep moving. But look at it as when it happens. We can look at symptomatic things, right? When we stop taking care of ourselves a little bit more than we used to, when we let things go that we once loved that we're not doing anymore, also could just be a change that maybe we're just bored with it and we're looking for new things too. It doesn't have to be directly symptomatic relation to depression, right? But these are the things we look at. Sleeping in too long, that's why when you look at depression diagnosis, are you sleeping more than normal? Are you staying in bed and not getting up? Or are you not sleeping at all? Somehow both of those can correlate to symptoms of depression, right? So it's just, well, a little this, little that. And you can look at it like that, but you have to understand it works in a few hand in, it works in hand in hand with a few things. Your biology is one of them. Your sleep, even the sunlight that you get, right? These things play in to, well, your biology, especially if you're sick or you have other things going on with you. It plays into that. What you do, how you behave, your nutrition, what you eat, what you're putting in the body. I promise, look, man, motherfuckers, I know you are inundated constantly with exercise and nutrition and how that affects things. I know. But I cannot stress it to you enough how much just pure movement, being active, has a major, major impact on dealing with depression and anxiety. See, I talk about in the book, in my book, Cognitive Rampage, that, look, your mind may not want to get you out there to take a walk, to take a run, to do something physical. It may not want to, but you literally can move your body against your mind, aka willpower. When we move our body beyond what our mind wants us to do, and then all of a sudden we're attacking depression from a behavioral aspect, not just a mental aspect. Depression a lot of times ruminates in the thoughts, right? It begins to shape how you are thinking currently, right? So how you behave, plus all the other things I just mentioned, and the environments that you're in, when the environment that you're in, when your biology is off, all of the other things I mentioned, this begins to shape our behavior. All of these things begin to shape how you think. Many people in cognitive behavioral therapy and other things will tell you, hey, just reframe it, change how you're thinking, and then you'll be fine. It's difficult to change how we are thinking and what we are thinking when the other four are really what's causing it, right? So I'm holding the hand up here, right? So if we have behavior, we have environments, we have our biology, sleep, nutrition, when these things are doing what they're doing, this begins to shape how and what we are thinking, this one thing. So when people look at you and go, hey, just change how you're thinking, just reframe it and make it a happy day, and well, you'll have a happy day. No, this is why this seems like, what the fuck are you talking about? Because these five things versus the one thing of how we think. How you are thinking when you're current in the depression and anxiety is being shaped by those five things. So if you choose to just battle mentally and sit around and change how you think constantly, you will just fight yourself and chase your tail, because the other things that shape how and what you are thinking, more than likely you're not working on, because how you are thinking is affecting how you're not able to do those other things. So what do you control? Yes, you can control how and what you are thinking, but when you are sitting in the midst of the depression, when you're being affected by depression and anxiety, how you think is really determined by what you do, what you eat, and how much you sleep and move. These become more powerful than just what you're doing cognitively, just changing what and how you think. That will come later. And don't wake up some morning and go, well, I'm still depressed, because it's not a quick fix. It's not an easy fix. Yes, you can change how and what you are thinking in the present. You can certainly do that. And I like to say that that stops the redlining, if you imagine a car in the RPMs, right? When it's redlining up there and you're like, holy shit, you know, I'm not feeling very good. I'm anxious. I'm high. I want to go to the hospital. I'm feeling depressed. You know, suicidal thoughts are coming. When you're redlining like that, then we can use what and how we are thinking just to bring the redlining back a little bit, right? Find things to be grateful for. Even write down some goals if you want to. To be in the present, to ask yourself, I am valuable regardless of what I am performing. And I'm also valuable regardless of what I am thinking. Because what I am thinking and how I am thinking is being dictated, controlled by my behavior, by my choices, by my biology, by my movement, by my sleep, by many other factors. This is why simply just attacking it with what you are thinking, that's one on five. Now, there's some homies out there that I give the odds to when it's one versus five. But let's assume that all of these dudes are equal. If all these dudes are equal in badassness, all right, that's medical terms for you, all right, that's clinical, and you got one versus five of them, well, it can seem like a mountain. It's not just about what you think. And pull any of those out. It's just not about what you're doing either. what you're doing is, well, one of those six. It's not just about what you're eating. It's one of those six. It's not just about how you're sleeping. It's one of those six. And they all affect us all differently at different times, but they go hand in hand. It's a full-fledged attack. You can't just say, well, I'm going to try to eat a little bit better, and then that's it. But I would urge you to say that. Because what you control is what you eat. And if you just chip away a little bit at a time and stop waking up going, damn it, I'm still sad. Stop making the statement, damn it, I am still depressed. You are not depressed. You are being affected by depression. This helps. May seem little, but it helps. Changing a little at a time, attacking it the same way it attacked you. Depression doesn't just attack you and go, boom, you're depressed. You're no longer behaving this way, thinking this way. It slowly creeps into our lives. It attacks what you're eating. It attacks how you're sleeping. It attacks who you're hanging out with and the environments you either remove yourself from, which may have been good for you, and bad environments you put yourself in. It attacks your behaviors, what you're thinking, how you're thinking. It attacks your nutrition, your sleep. It attacks these things a little at a time to put you in that hole of depression. So the way you get out of that hole of depression is the same way you got into that hole. You tinker a little time, each day, each little moment, with those individual things. Try to eat a little better today. But you don't set yourself this huge goal of going, I'm going to lose 20 pounds in 2 weeks, like you're cutting weight for a UFC fight, and then you fail at that, and you go, holy shit, I can't even do that right, because you're trying to make this massive quick fix and just be better the next day. Doesn't work that way. Because depression creeps on your life a little at a time. Anxiety creeps on your life a little at a time. Now, outside of the outstanding variable of anxiety and depression that begins to occur after a traumatic event. But either way, you're in that hole, and you got to climb out that hole a little at a time. You chip away at it. I mentioned on a few other podcasts, right, that a drip of water on a brick means absolutely nothing. But over time, a drop on that brick, boom, 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 over time, cuts that brick in half. This is how you need to look at depression, anxiety, the approach to take at it. I'm not saying that outside variables don't exist, that people can't heal themselves like that and wake up and just have a whole different perspective in life. Yes, these outlying variables happen, but it came on to you a little at a time and attacked each little part of you at a time, dwindling it down a little bit, chip, chipping, chipping. Then you find yourself there. And it's okay to accept, hey, I'm being affected by depression or anxiety right now. What I urge you not to do, I've heard so many people, as you hear that anger come out in me, so many people say, well, this is just something I have to learn to deal with. No, you fucking don't. You can beat anxiety. You can beat depression. I have done it my damn self. I know people that have done it their damn self too, with a lot of other help and working on those five different influences of our lives. It's when we resign to the fact, when we wave the white flag and say, this is who I am depressed. I am anxious. When we define ourselves by our symptoms, we have waved the white flag and you have given up. You have defined yourself by symptoms. If I have the flu, I do not say I am sore throat. I am stuffy nose. I am headache. These are symptoms of me being sick. And I treat it the best way I can. We do not define ourselves by our symptoms. And you certainly do not define yourself by your performance. Because when you define yourself by your performance, this is how you wound up in this depression and anxious hole to begin with. This is what has led you there to begin with. So we get out of it the same way it got there. You can control what you do. Despite what your mind says you can or can't do, you can control what you do and what you don't do. You can control what you put in your mouth. You can control how you think. Now, automatic thoughts happen. I also love how a symptom of some mental health diagnosis is automatic thoughts. I had to write it for years on people's charts. Well, patient shows automatic thoughts. Who the fuck doesn't? If you show me a way to shut off the automatic thoughts going through your mind, then please show me how to. Because when you meditate, meditation is not even about shutting off your mind. It's about releasing your mind, turning on the faucet of your thoughts and allowing them to flow through you like water droplets in a shower, in your mind and out your body and down the drain, letting those thoughts go. Of course, a motherfucking human's got automatic thoughts. What do you think? Doctors have an automatic thoughts. The ones telling you that you have symptoms of automatic thoughts. You are not your symptoms. You are not defined by your behaviors, bad or good. You are not your accomplishments. You are that infant child that has value and limitless potential human value just for being the person you are. That is where I urge you to hang your laurels in judgment of your self-worth, not by society's standards and what you've been taught and reinforced through social constructs over your life. But you can also get out of this hole. It's not about waking up tomorrow and being done with it and saying, oh, I've made it. Oh, well, the other shoe has dropped. I'm depressed again. You attack it the same way that it got there. You change your environments. You change your people, places, and things. I know that sounds pretty generic, but it's difficult when you have friends. It's difficult when friends around you are dealing with depression and anxiety. I promise you, that demon will jump on you too when you go around them. You got to be able to take care of yourself. Remove people out of your environments, even if you love them. Removing music, removing movies, removing certain things and behaviors. I always urge people to clear out your life. Clear it all out. Too removed, I say in the book. If a friend of a friend is friend with somebody that is not a good people, place, or thing for you at the time, remove that from your life at the same time, too. You can let them back in. You don't need to send them a fucking postcard. You need to take care of yourself and ease it back in, right? If the doctor's taking something cancerous out of you, which is another little side note, I would love to see a surgeon come in and take depression out of you. As someone compared depression and anxiety to cancer, you can't remove it surgically, sir. It's for your own fucking left field. Just to justify and rationalize your own experience with depression and anxiety, you pull people that battle cancer into proven argument. It's not even scientifically factual, you fucking idiot. Sorry. I get mad about that because the people that do battle cancer getting compared to people with depression and anxiety. I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry. Just, yeah, all three of them can end your fucking life. They certainly can. But two of those, you choose to end your own life. The other one, you don't get to choose. It's different scientifically, dude. Anyway, I'm off on left field. I do that when people just, when they say things like that. But anyway, you pull yourself out of it with those five ways. Take your time. Don't judge yourself. Don't expect it to be gone the next day, but also don't expect it to be there the next day. Thoughts become things. Our performance is not our value. You can beat it. So many people resign to the symptoms, to the diagnoses. Resign and say, this is who I am now. I'm an addict, they say. This is self-defeating. Being affected by addiction is not the same thing as being an addict. But I promise you this, if you believe yourself to be an addict, well, you certainly will be an addict. And there's no such thing as an addictive personality. I have an addictive personality. Yeah, I do. Really. I want you to look that up for me. Addictive personality, my ass. We pull ourselves out of it. You can beat it. When you change the mindset of this is something I have to cope with to this is something I'm going to beat, it changes. I want you to think about that child I talked about in the beginning, that infant child. And if you have one, I want to imagine it's your child. And that child is standing in a ring where you fight to the death. And this infant is fighting the almighty depression or the almighty anxiety. Would you step in that ring and say, well, son or daughter, we're going to just have to cope with this in the ring for the rest of our lives? I don't think you would. I think you would beat it down. I think you would beat down the almighty depressions and anxieties. because that's your infant behind you that can't perform, remember? And when you approach it this way, you may realize that you're the only one actually standing in the ring. If you would tell your own children to just resign to the fact that you have depression and anxiety or you are an addict, and to resign to this fact, then you are placing them in a fight for their entire lives, just like you might be putting yourself in a fight for your entire life if you take the mindset of defining yourself by the symptoms and not going to the root of the problem. If you're in that ring and you're fighting depression and anxiety, you have to approach it with the mindset that you will beat this. That this is not something that will define who you are. I don't care how much trauma you've been through, because we can rationalize to ourselves, well, I've been through this, I've been through this trauma, that trauma, and the other, and based on all the research I'm seeing, this is something I'm supposed to battle for life. Well, my grandfather was an alcoholic, his father, my father, my mother was an alcoholic, and all of these are reasons why I can definitively say that I am an addict and an addictive personality, and I'm more than likely going to be an alcohol my entire life, especially if you believe it to be fucking so. This is not so. That actually truly scientific research shows that environments can be more powerful than genetics. That genetics and predispositions are not guarantees. And even if those guarantees that they say in quotes of predispositions expose themselves due to traumatic experiences and it comes out, this does not have to define who you are. You are not your genetics. You are a makeup of some genetics, of your environments, of your choices, of your beliefs, of your behaviors. Do you see? You're a melting pot of many things. So just to attack what you're being affected by with one tool, to attack six tools, you may see why it seems like a cycle behavior. It's just who I am, you might say. This is why I speak so affirmatively about not defining yourself with that stupid statement, that's just who I am. You know as well as I know that change is a part of life, that we are in a constant state of change, that our environments, both in our heads and around us, has plasticity. We can control it. We can change it. But if you believe something to be so, then I promise you, it's so. No matter what science says. Don't beat yourself up. Drip on that brick. Little at a time. Little at a time. Change how you eat a little bit. Get a little bit better sleep. Maybe one or two less drinks. Maybe one or two less pills if that's how you want to do it. Maybe a new person. Maybe cut one old person. Know what you can control. What you do. What and how you think. What and how you eat. How you sleep. These things you can control. When we put that change onto other people, we are setting ourselves up to give ourselves an excuse to say, well, they just didn't help me. When those expectations of healing yourself are given to other people, you are giving your power away and setting yourself up for failure. In the end, it's you that changes you. Not the medication, not the mommy, not the daddy, not the school, not the military, not that pill, not this podcast, not my book, not any book or that meme or that speaker. It's you that changes you in the end. And it's you that will save your own life. But remember, drip on that brick. Don't beat yourself up. Don't wait for the other shoe to fall. And don't just hope that break comes for you. Fight it with all the tools that you have and get rid of it the same way that it showed up. It showed up a little at a time. It started beating on what you thought, how you think about yourself. It started telling you you didn't have value. Then your performance started to change a little bit. You may have lost some material things or some people that were supposed to, quotes, be there forever. Then your behavior changed a little bit. Then your biology began to change a little bit. Maybe you even got sick and got cancer even. To rid it, you have to believe you can beat it. You cannot define yourself by what you're experiencing. Remember, you do not say, I am headache, do you? Do not be defined by the symptoms. Define yourself. Don't allow your performance to define your self-worth. Remember, the infant has value. You're still that infant. That infant performs poorly at most things. Ask most of these new parents, right? The kid's crying. He's keeping everybody awake. How rude. Doesn't care about anybody else around. Doesn't care that that's your new shirt when it spits up on you. Doesn't care that you're busy when it shits itself. It's actually performing pretty shitty. Excuse the pun. But you love it. And the baby still has value. If your own child was doing that, of course, you'd still love it. If I asked you now if your child at 14, 24, or 4 was performing all of these ways, does it still have value? Does your baby still have value to you despite? Your answer better be yes. Then ask yourself, why can I apply that same math to my own life? If it's good enough for my child, why isn't that good enough for me? It is good enough for you. How you perform does not dictate your self-worth. You are not your behaviors. You certainly are not your diagnoses. And be aware of what the eyes and ears take in daily. Observe yourself and your behaviors. Because many times when you can't trust your thoughts, when how you're thinking is disrupted, it's not like you normally think, then you need only look backwards at your behavior. And your behavior will point out to you how you really feel and what you're really thinking. And pay attention to your behavior. I keep reiterating this because it's not one thing. How you think certainly affects whether you're depressed or dealing with anxiety. But it's not all of it. How you eat certainly affects it. But it's not all of it. How well you sleep certainly affects it, but it's not all of it. How often you move and stay active certainly affects it, but it's not all of it. Who, what, and where you go certainly has an effect on you, but it's not all of it. So remember those stages of how you fight those things. The same way it got to you, it's the same way you're going to get rid of it, a little at a time. Drip on that brick. Control what you can. Get out of your life the things you can't control. I promise you, with all of my heart, you can and will beat depression and anxiety when you approach it with those tools and those methods, and you have the real belief that you can. The opposite belief, well, if you believe it, it's certainly going to make it so. Appreciate everybody tuning in tonight. I've been wanting to get that podcast out of me for a while. You know, I didn't get to the topic, you know, that was on it, but, you know, I'm here. So, you know what? I'm getting it all out. Otherwise, I'm gonna have to go. I hit the hour right on the head, But it'll be bothering me the whole time unless I cover it. I'm going to talk a little bit about performing risky behavior. If you've noticed my personal page on Facebook, I've been posting a lot of some crazy stunts. And on my Instagram as well, Cognitive Rampage Instagram, of people doing some crazy things. And I mean crazy things, man. There's also a rush happening, a emergence, if you will, of more and more risky behavior being performed, right? You see these kids climbing up towers, dangling by one hand, right? You see these things, right? Adrenaline junkies, they call them. They live for it, by the way. And that's okay. Whatever moves you, I'm not trying to judge you. But I'm just going to read you the notes directly here. Performing risk-taking behavior. This is actually classified in mental health as a symptom of many mental health diagnoses, which is true. just like I've had to write down many mental health diagnoses of automatic thoughts, which I used to write that and go, what are humans not having automatic thoughts, but somehow it's a negative symptom? It doesn't make any sense. But risk-taking behavior is actually a symptom of many mental health diagnoses. But we have turned this into a bravery, a fearlessness, and a hope for a million likes and a couple million followers. Well, because it can make money. It can make money. So we put our life at risk. People put their lives at risk every day because they need it, because it's fun. I see it. I see it in a lot of different ways. Jumping off canyons with wingsuits, free climbing buildings, pedaling on bicycles on giant bridge handrails, hundreds of feet up in the air. I mean, the emergence of the X Games, right? We see these things. We give kids millions of dollars in sponsorship money for risky behaviors and for risking life and limb. We acquire head trauma, fighters and football players, for the same approval so we can perform well to define ourselves as valuable. We actually reward risky behavior today. Football's included in that. I played it for a long time, and even fighting, to which I'm a fan. I watch it. All of this has found and stems from a much deeper issue. I've done a little research into some of the people that are the best or at the top of their game in this. And look, we hold them on high. Guy swims around all of Great Britain. Oh my God, amazing. Guy runs for 37 hours and does 16 marathons in 10 minutes. Oh my God, we're amazed by these feats of performance. To me, I tend to laugh at it because it's like, well, choosing the fastest guy to be our leader. Well, he's fast. Well, whatever he says. I think it's amazing that we push our human bodies to do amazing physical things at the risk of our own lives and the risk of suffering. And these things can teach things. Don't get me wrong. I love to argue both sides. It can teach us things. It can save people from death, suicide, addiction. It can do amazing things. And if that works for you, then damn it, keep doing it. I'm in your corner telling you, round two, go for it. But many times, those at the top of the game have experienced some serious trauma. And it doesn't have to be a one-time incident. It can be in the environment that they were raised in, a hypervigilant environment, many times from an abusive environment. This abusive environment, this environment of hypervigilance, pushes us to recreate those environments. How can we recreate the norms so how I think and feel thus then feel normal to me? Rather than changing how we think, how we behave, we then just do acts and create environments that we immerse ourselves in that make how we think, feel, and behave as, well, normal. Even a plus, a tool, a wonderful thing to have, right? Violence to bullying, abandonment, and even to the go, go, go achievement influence, right? You see that today. If you're sitting still for 5 minutes today, somebody on social media that's making some money doing some things, go, oh, you're a loser. You have to work all the time, like the one douchebag, Gary Vee. Oh, I hate Fridays. I hate Fridays because everybody breaks for Fridays. And, well, I've dedicated my whole life to working, so everybody else should. So I hate Fridays, and I'm judging everybody else as being losers because for 2 days out of the week, they throw everything to the motherfucker, fuck you. That's what I've been wanting to tell him. Every time I see that video, Mr. Gary Vee, oh, I hate Fridays. Well, we should all be like you then, huh, Mr. Gary Vee? Then we will have made it. We will make millions of dollars doing what we love to do, apparently. Then how come you never look happy, bruh? You never look happy, Gary. I'm just telling you. You're always wearing a sock on your head when it's summertime, telling everybody else what they need to do with their lives, and you hate Fridays, and we're all stupid because we like the weekend, and you can't even smile, bruh. I'm just putting it out there, man. The point is, when we're repeating risky behaviors, or adrenaline junkies, as they like to refer to themselves to, and myself at one point as well, we begin to create the neurological pathways to ourselves, the rewards, the neurological rewards that happen the first time you skydive. For me, the first time I shot a gun, the first time I sold some dope or ran some kilos, The first time that happened, I got rushes, baby, and I wanted to feed that continually. I get it, so don't talk to me like I don't understand what it feels like and why we do stupid things to repeat behaviors. We do them because they create reward system, neurological reward systems that help us feel good, if you will, getting that rush back. And then we got to get it back. And now we reward that risk-taking, that destruction of ourselves. It feels like home when we're up there soaring in that scared fear, because all of that makes the rest of it go away. It's like one big wave. We are rewarded for the risky behavior until the one time the parachute doesn't open, or the one time the car hits the wall, or that last shot on the football field means you die at 55. Scary. This is especially true for people, for men and women that experience prison. If you've noticed, if you've ever watched the lockups or the lockdowns or those county prison shows, seem like everybody can freestyle rap. It's because they're trying to find flow. The more we find flow, as we've learned from Stephen Kotler and others at the Flow Genome Project, check out Stephen Kotler's 2 episodes on the podcast, that it actually shuts the brain down. So when you're driving that race car at Mach 5, when you're skydiving, when you're freestyling, when you're doing what puts you in flow, the brain shuts down and it's not working as much. We're finding this is actually healing. You can find healing properties in this. Hence why you see so many men and women in prison freestyling every time that camera comes by, filling that time and filling that void, trying to shut that brain down, trying to remove themselves from the environment in which they are currently in. I'm just pointing that out, that a lot of times risky behavior is linked to trauma, multiple traumas, or trying to escape our present thoughts. And some people may say, hey, I just do it for fun. I got you. Just pointing that out, because sometimes that chute doesn't open, y'all. I kind of chopped through that one in about 9 minutes and 2 seconds to flow through that one. But my brain is shutting down, people. I put everything I had in that first half of the podcast, man. I was speaking from the heart on that one, and really hoping you, just really hoping you can believe that you can beat depression and anxiety, that you can change any of those things. I already have the next podcast topic I'm not talking about tonight, but the notes are, they filled up. That's why I had to get those out of here. And the next Cognitive Rampage, I got some cool guests coming up, by the way. Chris Bell is coming back on the podcast, director of Leaf of Faith. That's a documentary put together about Kratom. It's on Netflix now. If you watch that tonight, if you're chilling tonight, pull up Chris Bell's, what's his 4th documentary called Leaf of Faith. Chris Bell was back on the show, I think episode 32, way back. This is episode 222. But Chris Bell he's been all over Rogan and stuff like that. He came on the podcast a long time ago, talked about his other documentary, Prescription Thugs, another great documentary to watch, and Bigger, Stronger, Faster, as well as his documentary, Trophy Kids. If you're a parent that has a child or a teenager involved in sports, watch Trophy Kids, all right? Look up Chris Bell's documentary, Trophy Kids, Bigger, Stronger, Faster as well. If you're a big weightlifter, nutrition taker, nutritional supplement taker, maybe even a steroid user, watch Bigger, Stronger, Faster. Check out all of Chris Bell's documentaries. But he'll be on the podcast coming up soon. Let's see. We booked a couple other people. I want to be able to pull it up so I can read them to you. We just emailed. I'd love to find them all for you. David Burns. David Burns, he is Emotional Fear or Feeling Good, his book Feeling Good. David Burns, Dr. David Burns, will be on the podcast coming up soon. And I have touched base with Haystack as well. He and I have been talking a few days. And I'm looking to have Haystack finally on the podcast. So it's taken some years to reach out to Stack, but we have certainly connected and been talking. It's amazing to me, actually, been talking a lot to him. And just a cool motherfucker, man. So look for Haystack to be on the podcast too coming up. And there's another guest. I'm sorry, forgive me, that I can't remember right now or look it up. But we have a lot of cool guests coming on the podcast. And the topic for my next personal cognitive rampage, when it's just me on the podcast, is why we lie. Been doing a lot of research on the back end of this too. So I'm looking forward to sitting down. I've got to unload my rampage notes as they are right here. But you'll see them right there. Yeah, so why we lie, the next show, this is how I do them like that. We covered a lot of notes tonight. So it'll be why we lie on the next Cognitive Rampage, myself, as well as social media debating. Just because I share it doesn't mean I believe it or condone it. So that'll be the next topics. I've told you about the next guest coming up as well. And a lot of love to Vermont Pure CBD, full spectrum wellness products. Check them out, man. Bam. Got to give them some love on this one. You can go to VermontPureCBD.com. Grant Jacobowski was just on the podcast too. I think he's episode 220. Go back and watch that one. Whole bunch of answers, competence, and knowledge dropped about CBD. Tell you what CBG is, CBN as well. You can learn about those things on that podcast. So a huge shout out to Vermont Pure CBD at VermontPureCBD.com. Full spectrum wellness products. Beautiful, beautiful fucking stuff, man. I use that myself. All kinds of healing stuff to it, man. I mean, I can try to show you some of the brochure, but this is just some of the things that it's used for. Boom. Amazing stuff. But you'll get all that stuff when he sends it to you. You can see the different kind of products they have. The capsules here. They have the drops right there. They even have the roll-on stuff right here and some of the pain stuff right there to rub it on, some aches and pains that you got. Certainly better than a Tylenol and an ibuprofen, y'all. But yeah, a lot of exciting stuff on the podcast. I hope you enjoyed tonight. Share this with somebody you love. Share this with somebody that's going through depression or anxiety. And a huge thank you again to everybody that listens to on iTunes or watches even on Facebook Live or goes back and watches later on the YouTube channel. You can subscribe if you will, please, on the YouTube channel. But it's cool if you don't. We don't drive all the traffic to YouTube. And we don't drive all the traffic from Facebook, as you can see here. So everything that we push has, from day one, we have pushed to iTunes. We have pushed everything for the last 3 to 5, 4 years. We've made sure all traffic we generate is coming from iTunes. So that's why I get a lot of love, give a lot of love to those that subscribe on iTunes and leave reviews. I love you all very much. I appreciate it. It means a whole lot. And those that do tune in live here on Facebook, when I'm going live randomly and you tune in and you comment, I see all your comments and I see you when you chime in. I see the emojis that you're dropping up when I'm going off. And it gives me some fuel, man, when I'm going off. So I appreciate it. All the guys and girls out there, it's a lot of love. I couldn't have done this without you. We crossed over 100,000 downloads on iTunes a month last month. So that's why I was talking about it. It was really cool to get to that point finally. So I think we also got ranked in as number 10 in an alternative health podcast and in another category too. Either way, all of that just means you all help us out. It has nothing to do with the podcast or the content. It just means you all have stuck with us, stuck with myself, doing this podcast for so long, listening, sharing. So please, if you would now, if you don't have an iPhone, go to Stitcher. You can find us on Stitcher. Subscribe and please leave a review. It means a lot from the bottom of my heart. It really does help. Or go to iTunes right now. Just go to iTunes, type in Adam Lowry. That'll pop up. Or type in the Cognitive Rampage on the iTunes app on your iPhone. You can also find it on Podbean if you have another kind of phone other than an Android or an iPhone. So you can find it all over there. Subscribe there. It's most important. And like always, the book's available on Amazon. A lot of what I talked about tonight is, well, from that book and how you treat it. I mean, that's why I wrote The Cognitive Rampage, y'all. There needed to be a different approach to anxiety, depression, addiction, other things. It needed to be that five-prong approach, not just one simple little thing, but something you can really apply to your own life and, well, implement in your own life. So that book's an experience, y'all. It's just not something you read. It's something you do. All right. Love y'all very much. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your Cognitive Rampage. Love you.
Yeah. This for all my people that grew up being told that they would be dead in the penitentiary by the time they were grown. And then you wonder why they got depression, self-esteem, anxiety issues, you know. After so long, you start to believe it. I recall everything I was told. Boy, you never lived to be 18 years old. Dead or incarcerated just like those people who wander down similar roads. Leaving out the house, you say, please don't go. Granny, why you stay trying to save my soul? If death is my destiny, like you had said to me, let me get busy before he gets the best of me. Don't you know bullets don't have no brain? And a lot of youngers don't have no aim. Am I living or dying? Somebody please explain. Go understand, because I'm going insane. I'm strapped up cause he is shiesty cause she is. Meanwhile, dude who teach chemistry is in his office with a kid doing shit I get expelled for, which makes me wonder why people go to jail. Even if I did die young, so nobody expected me to ever grow up. Grandmama lectured me, you better grow up. But there was no telling me I wasn't grown up. Even if I did die young, so nobody expected me to ever grow up. Grandmama lectured me, you better grow up. But there was no telling me I wasn't grown up. I'm a kid peeping injustice, y'all, let's slide. But you're so quick to point out mine. That's what made me draw that line, blinded by my own design. I'm doing fine. No, I'm not, I'm doing bad, but I'm so afraid to talk. Y'all got shit going on, I don't wanna bother y'all. Pause cut from a different cloth, never be the man he was. Thought I was slow, I turned out to be a genius. And I ain't return like eat my peanuts. Let our bank statements be the difference between us. If I seem distant, bitch, I'm 30-something. I was supposed to bend up in a murder victim. My grandpa prayed till his knees gave way. If he can't save me, God, please save Jason. The way I went in, that's all the explanation. I know some bad dudes, enough to know I ain't. Even if I did die young, so nobody expected me to ever grow up. Grandmama lectured me, you better grow up. But there was no telling me I wasn't grown up. Even if I did die young, so nobody expected me to ever grow up. Grandmama lectured me, you better grow up. But there was no telling me I wasn't grown up. I was confused, and you can hear it in my rhetoric. In retrospect, I never should have made it back. I wrote my senator and never got a letter back. My friend Chris got killed for a Cadillac. My man Mike died for a powder pack. So understand why I could think that I was next. Under attack, guns and crack. Or the motherfucking police shoot us in the back. And they think it only happens to blacks. And refuse to believe it almost happened to Stack. Stabbed in the back, blood beating through a heart, filled with crack. Soldiered up, fought through that. Injuries, a lot of players don't walk off. I walked off, cause I ain't the type to walk off. If you're family, you're supposed to love me when I'm wrong. Be a man and represent me when I'm gone. Stones in the foundation get looked over, but without them, the whole damn house fall over. This is for the rocks that exist beneath me. The block which gave me a pass to beat me. BBs are baby bullets, babies are in training. My people were banging before they called it banging. Just chilling, hanging, words exchange. One thing led to another, all I heard was. Even if I did die young, so nobody expected me to ever grow up. Grandmama lectured me, you better grow up. But there was no telling me I wasn't grown up. Even if I did die young, so nobody expected me to ever grow up. Grandmama lectured me, you better grow up. But there was no telling me I wasn't grown up.